We'll dedicate tonight's class, God willing, for Refush Lama for Mike. It's very startling news. Hopefully, we'll get an update to find out where he is and see if there's any way we can be of help to him. But at least we'll.
He's supposed to.
Yeah.
No. I was just gonna say, I know Debbie was going to be giving Kiddush the Shabbos for your plate.
All right. All right. We'll dedicate our learning tonight for him. So tonight's learning, it won't be about Gittin, Phyllis, per se, because we did a class on the prenuptial agreement, and we talked a little bit about Jewish divorce process. But what I am thinking of addressing tonight, not thinking of, I decided already, don't worry. I have to decide at some point before, even if it's a few minutes. But what we are going to study tonight is we're going to learn about a different part of, I guess what one might call the life cycle, though it's not part of most people's life cycle, but we're going to be talking about conversions. And we're going to be talking about a very basic overview of how the Geira, what goes into Geiras, the halachos behind conversions. Now, I don't mean particularly to get into the minutiae of, you know, why the chief rabbin has this standard, why, you know, a basin over there has that particular standard. But what I do want to do tonight is give us the background information and understand what is required for someone to convert, what are the conditions, to then understand where the ambiguity lies, and therein we could start understanding why there's such a variance between different Batei Dinim, different courts, when it comes to conversions. So some of the material in here is a little bit sensitive. I just want to make you aware of that, particularly the first source that we're going to see. It has multiple interpretations, and the base interpretation is not really a compliment, but I don't think it's meant to be taken literally. So I just wanted to prep you for that. But okay, and now does anyone know why I want to talk about conversions tonight in particular?
Yes, because of Ruth.
Very good. So what Phyllis has picked up on is that we have begun our preparation for Shavuos. So this Monday night, and God willing, next Monday night, we are doing Shavuos-themed classes. So tonight we're going to be talking about the idea of conversions because it relates to Sefer Rus. Ruth, after all, was the paradigmatic convert. We learn, actually, we're not actually going to see that source on the source sheet, unfortunately, because I fit everything into two pages this time. But Ruth is actually looked at as the paradigmatic source when she says, where I go, where you go, I'll go, where you lie, I'll lie. You look at Rashi on that pasuk there, he quotes Chazal, who derived from every line that Ruth makes, she's taking upon herself a different area of halacha. So that's how it relates in. So okay, let's jump right into it. Next week, I think I'll let you know what we're doing next week. I have two topics to pick from, but I can decide then. So let me share this sheet. This sheet actually has some translation on it, so we're going to do some screen sharing like the good old days instead of me just popping it into the chat, which it's not letting me do. Okay, let's zoom in just a little bit. Well, our journey begins in the Gemara in Maseches Yevamos. And this is the source that I wanted to prep you not to jump to any conclusions. Amar Mar, Ger Shebali Skyer. So let's say someone comes to a Beis Din, they come to rabbinic court, and they say, you know, for whatever particular reason it is, I am interested in joining the Jewish faith. Wonderful. So what do you think is the next step for, well, without looking at the Gemara, those of you who already looked already, don't cheat. what do you think is
send
the next
them
step?
Away.
What was that?
Send them away. Send them away.
Jesus says, send right. them away. Now, why would you think send away? That doesn't sound too courteous, does it?
Right. You want to make sure they want to get in.
Ah, okay. So we don't want to actually, this is something that we actually, people mistake sometimes. Okay. What you're saying is what most people say, and it is somewhat true, but let's take a look at the Gemara.
I don't agree with it, but.
You don't agree with it. Well, maybe it's possible. You might not be fully understanding what the Gemara says, and that's why you disagree with it. Though you might understand the Gemara, and you might still not really like it. I can't promise anything. It wouldn't be the first time we had people not like a particular source that I shared. But this is the Gemara, after all. So this is a very important source in our tradition. So similar, Susan, to what you say, but I want to add a little layer of nuance. And that's why it's always important for us to look at the sources and not and see what it actually says. Amar Mar, Gersha Bolis guy, or someone who comes and says, hey, I'm interested in joining the Jewish faith. Omer Mlo, Mara Isa Shabosis Skyer. So first we ask, well, why do you want to convert? There's a little bit of a longer version of this, which we say, why do you want to convert? After all, don't you know that the Jewish people, back in the times of the Talmud at least, were in exile, we don't have our own nation, things are looking down for the Jewish people. Why do we want to join this nomadic tribe of slaves? We're being sold from one place to the other. Now, nowadays, by the way, with Jewish people having, you know, having the state of Israel, and look, we still, there's a lot of anti-Semitism. You only have to look at the news in Riverdale. There's a lot of anti-Semitism that's still going on. But certainly Jews within the post-Holocaust years of getting the state of Israel and conquering much of the land there, we're in a pretty good state in history right now compared to a lot of our history. But what we're assuming is someone who's not Jewish who wants to convert, we say, why are you interested in joining us? Okay, but let's say he says, I want to join, I'm interested. So modiemoso mixus mitzus kalos, u mixas mitzus chamuros. So we teach him some of the minor mitzvos and some of the major mitzvos, meaning you'll, you know, teach him some of the fundamentals. What do you guys think are major and minor mitzvos? I'm just curious. What do you say is a major mitzvah we got to teach?
Shabbos.
Okay. Sadie and Phyllis say Shabbos. Shabbos is a very important mitzvah. That is true. You know, I got a tour of bicultural today. Don't ask me what took me so long. I'm here almost a year. I figured it was about time. I'm fully vaccinated. So I went through and got a tour of the school. So we went into a preschool classroom. I got to see all the grades, and the mora is sitting on the floor with the children. And she says, what mitzvah did Rabbi Akiva tell us? And like this little like 5-year-old is like, v'ahavta reicha kamocha. You know, that is the mitzvah. So maybe v'ahavta reicha kamocha is a mitzvah chamura. That's a really important mitzvah. We can debate what are considered big, what are considered small. There is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that some of us may recall. The Mishnah says that you should treat a mitzvah kala like a mitzvah chamura. Treat a lighter mitzvah like a heavier mitzvah, because we don't really know the scar. We don't know the reward that we get for them. So what might appear to me as a small mitzvah is really a big one. But apparently over here, the Gemara is assuming that we know how to distinguish. Now, my time, Susan, this is your point over here. Why do we do all this? Why do we quickly, you know, teach him these mitzvahs and interrogate him? Because the iparish nifrosh. Because if he's not really committed, we want to be upfront with him. We don't want to, you know, we want to be honest. Remember how when we dealt with last week, we're talking about how the importance of Jewish education and, you know, honesty and integrity in presenting the sources in a clear and transparent fashion. If someone wants to join a Jewish faith, we don't want to string people along. Our goal is not to proselytize. We want to be upfront and be honest and show prospective converts what the Jewish faith has to offer. Now, it has a lot of good stuff to offer, I hope, I believe. But just because it's good stuff doesn't mean it's not challenging stuff also. So we want to be upfront. Now, you can't teach all the Torah, because many of us probably don't know the entire Torah. I don't know the entire Torah. But so we have to choose some essentials. The goal is not to shoo somebody away. We are actually happy to accept a convert, but we just want to make sure that we're getting someone who is genuinely dedicated to the process. And now this is the surprising line, Domer Rabbi Chelbo, Kashim Gerim Yisrael Kisep Pachas, because people who convert into the Jewish people are hard for them. Kisep Pachas translates literally as a sore or a scab. Now that sounds very insulting, right? If I called one of you guys a sore or a scab, chances are, you know, that you wouldn't really take that in a positive fashion. But so there's a few interpretations of this. It's obviously not referring to someone who's a genuine convert, but it's referring to, you know, remember how in the Chumash class, our Sunday morning folks, we're talking about the Erev Rav. We're talking about how certain people, they pretended they didn't really want to convert, but they wanted to join the Jewish people for certain benefits, right? Let's say they're or Makos people. Let's say you're living in Israel under Jewish dominion. So if you accidentally kill someone, you want to know that you're going to Gullus into exile, not that you're gonna get capital punishment. So some people might want
to. They have capital punishment. Do they have capital punishment for other people?
What was that? What do you mean?
I thought capital punishment was banned in Israel.
Capital punishment does not exist because we no longer have a Sanhedrin, a Supreme Rabbinic Court that sits on the Temple Mount.
Yeah.
So that's why we don't.
Although they did kill Eichmann.
I'm not drawing on the screen. I'm not sure how that happened. Okay. You know, Aline, you discovered something I don't know how to do myself. You figure out how to draw a line on the screen. You're going to have to teach me that method later. It'd be very useful. I'm not sure how to erase it, though. Okay. Am I the only one who sees it?
Do you have a touch screen or not?
I don't. You see, I'm very...
Oh, so you do it on the touchpad, then.
I have Marissa's old laptop. I'm very frugal with this. I'm very old-fashioned here. Okay. So Tosos says maybe one understanding of a ger being like a sapachas is not in a case, again, where you have a genuine convert, but where you have someone who the Beistin actually made the mistake. Shemekalon Osamiyad, that immediately when someone walked in the doors, they said, I want to be Jewish. You know, they're like, Shkoyach, they stamped the guy, you're now a Jew, and they just accept him straight up without asking any questions. That's when there's difficulties. But of course, someone who converts into the Jewish faith, who is genuine and has honest intent, not only are we okay with that, but we praise that. After all, once again, we have an entire Sefer, an entire book in Tanakh called Sefer Rus, which is the main character. It's dedicated to a woman who decided to go out of her way to join the Jewish faith. So that's an important word of introduction. Now, let me pause. Any questions, anything we could clarify in these few sources over here? Okay. I'll let you think about the Sapachs thing a little bit more. But let me ask you a question. Okay, so we've done our interrogation, so to speak. I mean, I know interrogation has a negative connotation. We've done our, let's call it an interview. We've done our interview. We've made sure to educate the person, make sure that they understand the mitzvos well enough so they know what they're getting into and they know how to conduct themselves as a religious Jew once they, God willing, convert. What exactly, you know, walk me through it. What is the process of conversion, practically speaking? Okay, we determined that this person is a genuine ger. He's converting because he genuinely wants to join Jewish people because he believes in the Jewish faith. Wonderful. And he knows basic halacha right now also. So, great. How do we turn him into a Jew? What do we need to do, guys?
Uncle.
Give me one. There's three steps in the process. Actually, arguably four.
You know, one of the things you want, what I have heard is that you want to be sure they're not converting just for the purpose of marriage, that they really fully and passionate about conversion.
Very good. So we will get to that. We will get to that later on. And you are correct. Meaning, won't there be something lacking in the person's intent if they're doing it for ulterior motives? So the Ritva brings up, the Ritva, I think, is it who brings up this point based on the Gemara. I think it's in Yevamos that it's actually, the Gemara already dealt with this question. It came up a lot during the 20th century, but this question's been around for a long time. And the Machlokis, the position that says that even if someone converts for the sake of marriage, they're accepted, is because if someone's going to join the Jewish community, back when Jewish communities were more insular, or I guess if you're a more Haredi community where it's more insular, social pressure will force you to keep halacha. As we might know, you know, some certain communities that you might find, especially within the New York area, which are very concentrated with Jews. Even if I, you know, live there and I don't particularly care for halacha, I'm not so fervently religious, I'm going to wind up keeping the laws of, for instance, I'm not going to wind up, using my phone on Shabbos when everyone else around me is not doing it. So someone converts for the sake of marriage, they might actually be accepted nonetheless. Another case, I'll give you an example. I was speaking with someone from the Svardik based in Kew Garden Hills, Rabbi Chaim's based in one of the rabbis there. He said to me, and this actually is accepted very broadly, that if a man and woman are living together, you have someone who is not yet converted living with someone who is a Jew, and he wants to convert. We don't say that's for the sake of marriage because they're already living together anyway. So apparently they're already comfortable living together without being married. So converting, he must be converting for more genuine cause and not for marriage. So Helene, you're opening up an entire can of worms, but it's the right can of worms that we want to be opening. So it's an excellent point. The question though is, let's say I live in a Jewish community where there isn't such a, you know, for better or for worse, there isn't such a strong social pressure to be keeping halakha. So then could we apply that svara, that idea, that even if I don't particularly care for halakha, I just want to marry this woman, I'm going to keep it anyway. If I live in a very non-judgmental and very open and liberal Jewish community, then it's possible that that leniency wouldn't actually apply there, which I guess is my push for everyone to move to Borough Park in Lakewood. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, very good, Helene. So can anyone tell me what do you think?
There's a top of controversy in Israel right now.
What was that, Zadie?
You're opening up a whole topic of controversy in Israel because the Supreme Court, which has no business sticking its nose into halakha, especially since they happen to have one Muslim on the court, ruled that the Israeli government has to accept as Jews people converted, I put quotes around converted, by the Reform and Conservative movements.
Right. So this was a big topic for our Thursday morning class. We just finished an essay about the chief rabbinate, right? I think I see some of our Thursday morning folks over here. So for our Thursday morning folks, we went through a whole essay from Rav Lichtenstein about, you know, the relationship between the chief rabbinate and the seemingly secular state of Israel and how to balance that. A little bit beyond the purview of what I want to get to now, but you're thinking in the right direction. I want to get through the basic material. And you know what, maybe at the end we'll table a discussion for what does that mean for the state of Israel? What does that mean for practical terms? How Batei Dinim should operate? Okay, so there are three things that you need to do. I'll let you guys know what it is instead of forcing you to guess all of them. Three things that you need to do in the conversion process. The Gemara Maseches Krisus tells us as follows. Mila tvila v'artzas dam. If it's a man, he needs a bris. And both men and women need to go to mikvah. And when the temple was standing, you needed to bring a karban, a sacrifice as well. And that's how you join the Jewish people. So nowadays, unfortunately, we can't bring offerings in our temple. So what do we do instead? Really, all you have is a milah. You have a bris milah. So it depends. If the man was already circumcised, then all he needs is what we call a tafas dam bris, where they just take a little tipa, they take a little droplet of, just a tiny little prick, almost nothing. Not that I've tried it before. I mean, I guess it could be very major depending on your sensitivity, but a little prick instead of a circumcision if it was already done. And then there is tefillah, going to mikvah. And we're not going to get into this tonight, but I'll just let you know another Pandora's box is that the tevila is a maisa basedin. When someone goes to mikvah, you need a basedin. You need ideally a basedin there. And without the basedin, it throws your conversion into question. The issue is a basedin is comprised. Remember we talked about a female clergy? So he said a basin is comprised of three men. You need to be a rabbi. And rabbis who could get smicha were men, presumably. So only men served as dayan, and we learned that from the Gemara. So if you have a woman going to mikvah and you have three men there, it compromises snias to a huge extent. So what they do nowadays, just to address what you might be wondering, they basically give her this very The issue is you also, when you go to mikvah, there can't be a chatzitza. There can't be anything interposing between you and the mikvah water. Just like when anyone goes to mikvah, you can't have anything interposing between you and the waters of the mikvah. So what do? They give the woman this very loose dress of sorts.
Shmata.
Yeah, they give her a shmata. Yeah, exactly. Which covers her entire body. And that way, when she goes in, it's not, since it's so loose, it's not blocking the water, but it is blocking the sight of the basin. So the basin is able to observe her going into the mikvah. At the same time, it doesn't compromise the issues of tznius. So again, much to discuss over there as well, deserving of its own separate shiur, but I thought I would just mention that.
Rabbi, does this happen in Reform movement too? Do they require do they require a tvila, a mikvah for conversion?
I think many of them do.
I don't think they all do, though.
I mean,
there
are no requirements in general when Reform, because they don't have halacha. In principle, Reform Judaism rejected halacha, unlike conservative Judaism. Conservative Judaism, at least on the books, believes in some form of halacha. Reform Judaism, as part of their philosophy, rejected Jewish law as being binding. So in other words, you can do whatever the heck you want. So each Reform rabbi decides for themselves. But I think many of them like to do it because, you know, it has like a certain ritual feel to it to go to mikvah. You need something to mark the occasion. So I think there's a resurgence in the more secular Jewish world. People who want to feel spiritual, they will still go to mikvah because it gives them a spiritual experience, whatever that means.
Thank you.
Okay. But you call your local Reform rabbi. I think we got one of those here, so you can contact him and you can ask him what he does.
Yeah, I know they have a statement on their site saying, you know, that they, you know, because a lot of the Reform, I guess, are skittish about even Brit Milah. They, you know, advocated, as it were.
Advocate or abdicate?
Advocate it.
Oh, they advocate it. Okay. All right. Well, I'm not sure what they're up to, but. I think we have a Reform rabbi in town, so you can contact him, and I'm sure he'd love to share with you what their practices are. Okay, let's go forward.
What's instead of the carbon?
Ah, so we don't have a carbon today, really. Now, generally, we do, you know, nowadays we have carbonos in the morning. We can say the parsha of a carbon. We can read the passage in the Torah about a carbon to fulfill that carbon. But that's a whole question, actually. The question is, how are we allowed to do conversions nowadays without carbonos if that's a requirement? That's actually a discussion in the Rishonim, if I recall correctly. And most Rishonim say, okay, when the temple's around, you needed it. Now it's dispensable for the time being. Because in the pasuk it says that you can have conversions for all your generations, I believe. And if it says for all your generations, that implies even when it's not possible to bring a carbon. So good question. Very, very good ha'aros.
What you could do is bring me a nice gift.
We can always bring our kohanim a very nice gift. That is true.
Yes.
If my grandfather is accepting free gifts, if you want to give it to him in lieu of a carbon. All right. Now, what is the fourth criterion that I omitted?
Study?
Study, yeah.
What was that?
Studying.
Okay. Now, studying, but maybe more specifically, a Kabbalas Ol Mitzvos. Mm-hmm. You need to explicitly, you know, you like you put your right arm up, right hand up. Not really, but you explicitly accept upon yourself all the commandments of the Torah that are incumbent upon yourself. That also is something that's not mentioned here. But it gets explicated in the Achronim. And because the Gemara does not talk about an explicit Kabbalas HaMitzvos, an acceptance of mitzvos as a part of the process, it leads to certain controversies in the Achronim in 20th century scholars that we'll get to momentarily. But in the meanwhile,
It was Shabbos and Kashrut mainly. The two
so things. In terms of what?
Of accepting. Acceptance.
Oh, no, no. Oh, okay. Well, let's wait. You mean learning about it. Okay, so that distinction we're going to get through in just a moment. But before we get there, I just wanted to share one more thing. Rambam throws in something. You see, until now, we've been saying, oh, you know, you have to learn the different halachos in order to become a ger. But Rambam, what were Rambam's famous svarim? He wrote the Mishnah Torah, okay, his halachic work. And then what else did he write that he's really famous for?
Mor Nevuchim.
Mor Nevuchim. Very good, Toby. His Guide for Perplexed. Rambam was a theologian. And because he was a theologian, and you know, he also explicated 13 attributes of faith, principles of faith, look what he writes over here. My mistake. Let me first see the Gemara, and then we'll go to the Rambam. So the Gemara says, Obe kochem shabola kabel dibri Torah. If someone who's not Jewish comes to join the Jewish faith, but he accepts everything, chutz mi davar echad, and he's not willing, he's not accept 612 mitzvos, but I don't know, I really like to eat pork, whatever it is, a makabal, and so we do not accept him. Rabbi Yosef bar Yehuda omer, afiyot diktuk echad mi divrei sofrim. Even he's willing to say, I accept all the different mitzvos in the Torah, but some of the rabbinical enactments, so, you know, it could be muksa, which is rabbinical enactment, or you could say, you know what? I don't want to take on certain fasts. Tzom Gedalia. Who the heck was Gedalia anyway? Why do I need to take that on? That was actually when I took a course in conversions in as part of my rabbinical training. I think that was the example that the teacher gave. He said there was like one person he was working with. He was fine with like everything in the Torah and like all the rabbinical enactments and Minhagim. Like the one thing he just really couldn't wrap his head around was Tzom Gedalia. He's like, who the heck is this Gedalia guy? Why do I care he got assassinated? Why do I have to fast the whole day just for him? I mean, to be fair, I kind of feel the same way sometimes too. But we gave a shiur on that and we explained why it was important. But I do sympathize with him. So that's really important. And the Mishnah Torah, Rambam writes, Umodin oso, not just halacha, but ikore hadas, fundamentals of our faith, tenets of our faith. Shu Yichud Hashem, the unity of God, the Isser Akum, and the prohibition to worship idols. And what's he say? How much time should we dedicate to that by making a curriculum? Umarichin bedavar hazeh. You're supposed to spend a lot of time learning the fundamentals of Jewish philosophy. Umadiyah makes us mitzvahs kalas, makes us chamuros. And then we teach him some halacha as well. How much time do we spend on the halachos? We don't spend as much time on halacha. Now imagine you're making a day school curriculum for yeshiva, and they ask, you know, how much time should we spend on philosophy, how much on Gemara, how much on halacha? So, you know, 3/4 of the day you're spending on Gemara and halacha, and then okay, a quarter you throw in a little bit of Musar, you throw in a little bit of Jewish philosophy, throw in a little bit of Tanakh, squish it into that little corner over there. But Rambam's saying, no, you know, you got to spend a lot of your time understanding the fundamentals of faith, at least at an earlier stage in your education. That's very important. Now, Rambam might say, you know, we teach at least the basic fundamentals of our faith to kids when they're younger, albeit they come out with a very rudimentary understanding. Separate cheer, but food for thought. Okay. Let's share the screen once more and we'll head back into the sources. Now, Phyllis, you may have been alluding to the following point. So remember, there's a fourth condition we did not see in the earlier sources yet, which is the importance of not just bringing a carbon, not just getting a bris, not just going to mikvah, but that one is obligated, sorry, not one's obligated, one needs to accept upon himself the old Malchus Shemayim and the old mitzvos. That one has to accept God and God's mitzvos in order for him to convert. So there's this whole chakira. There's two ways to understand this. Why don't we see a mentioning of accepting the yoke of heaven? As it should be the fourth condition. Why are there three conditions? There should be a fourth. So some understand that it's a prerequisite. Meaning, of course, you accept the mitzvahs upon yourself. Because if you're not accepting upon yourself halacha and following the will of God, then that's not really called converting to Judaism. Because you want to convert to Judaism, you are submitting your will to the will of God. But if you're not accepting upon yourself all of the mitzvahs, then effectively you're not, definitionally speaking, you're not really accepting Judaism at that point. Judaism is not a pick and choose. You got to accept all the mitzvos. So some say that it's possible that it's a prerequisite to, and once you fulfill that prerequisite, you then go about the three requisites to actually converting. That's a possible understanding. But anyway, it is indispensable.
Is that kind of like the first commandment of accepting
Anochi Hashem?
And then, the rest of them are the commandments.
That's a very similar idea there, which is some say that the first commandment is not really, you know how we call it the Ten Commandments, but in Hebrew, the Aseres HaDibros. Mm-hmm. Notice how in Hebrew we don't call it the Ten Commandments, we call it the Ten Sayings, mm-hmm. or however you want to put it. Because some say Anochi Hashem is not a commandment, it's a prerequisite, meaning why would you follow the rest of the Torah if you don't accept Hashem as your God? So very good, Phyllis. That's a very good analogy. And that actually is a shear, I wouldn't say on our docket, but within my portfolio that maybe we could do at some point. Okay, so Ramosha Feinstein writes, Ger shelo kibal of mitzvos im nechshav ger. Pashut ubar she'eno ger klal af b'di'eved. If someone doesn't accept all the mitzvos upon himself, he's not considered converted, even ex post facto. And he goes so far as to say, "V'af im amar b'piv shemekal mitzvos." Even if he explicates, "I accept upon myself the 613 mitzvos of God," im anan tzahad yishen mekabel lav b'emes eino klum. But if then we see a few seconds afterwards he walks into the McDonald's or Burger King and gets himself a Big Mac, then did he really just accept all 613 mitzvos upon himself? Very doubtful. So if the next day the person is being mechal Shabbos, he's not keeping Shabbos, he's not keeping kashrus, he's not keeping the laws of the Torah the very next day, he's not even making an effort, it's very clear that what he did yesterday was not a genuine acceptance of the mitzvos, and he's not considered a convert even ex post facto. That's the opinion of Ramosha Feinstein. But there, and that, I would say, is relatively normative understanding, I believe. But there's a very radical position of Rabbi Ben-Zion Uziel from Israel, who I don't think he was addressing Ramosha directly. That wouldn't have made sense time-wise, I think. But in Piskei Uziel, he writes, actually, v'zeh l'chachila, accepting upon yourself the mitzvot is ideal. If you didn't inform the guy, it doesn't withhold the gerus. So there's a very big argument over here. To Moshe Feinstein, if you even accept upon yourself the mitzvahs, but we don't think you were genuine, it's not a valid conversion. And on the other extreme, you have Piskei Uziel, who's telling us that, no, it's pretty dispensable. Ideally, he accepts upon himself the mitzvos, but if he doesn't, that's okay. As long as he got a bris milah, he went to mikvah, brought a carbon during the temple when it was standing, then he's converted, whether he accepted the mitzvos or not. Two very radical views that I think we could actually reconcile.
Rabbi?
Yes, Toby.
Question on Rav Feinstein. I mean, his what he posed was, you know, if the next day you go out and you do these things.
I added that in, actually, the next day part.
But what were the time parameters? What if somebody was, like, really sincere and they towed the line for 2 years, let's say, and then they drifted?
Ah, very good.
What happens in that situation?
Very good. So we're going to look at Rav Shimon Shkop. Let's see. Let me pull it up. It's been a while since I put together this source sheet. Sorry, Rechaim Ozer Grudinsky. That makes more sense. We're going to look at Rechaim Ozer Grudinsky in just a moment, who, Toby, he basically addresses your case. So thank you for bringing that up. What Toby's asking is, you know, let's say it's not so clear cut. Ramosha's case, okay, like the next day or two, he's eating a Big Mac from McDonald's. But if 2 years down the line, he's not keeping mitzvos, what do we say retroactively? He didn't convert? That, you know, that could lead to such terrible consequences. And that's actually the point of Rabbi Tzinu Zeal. He writes, Dim lo kein lo yiskalu gerim b'Yisrael. Dimi yarav shegoi zeyen nemen l'chom mitzvah Torah. If we have such a high standard, you know, who could ever guarantee 100% that this non-Jewish person, when he converts, will stay true to the mitzvahs of the Torah? That's really his point. So the Chachma Shlomo, he makes probably the most important and fundamental distinction when it comes to understanding the mitzvah, when it comes to Kabbalah HaMitzvos. And if you have one takeaway from this class, remembering this Chachma Shlomo is the most important source. What he writes is as follows. Remember how we were talking about there's a mitzvah to inform somebody about the mitzvos? Mm-hmm. And then there's a mitzvah of Kabbalah HaMitzvos. I may have been using it a little bit interchangeably. They're actually two different things. Nir lefia niyas daiti, de Kabbalah HaMitzvos, v'hodas HaMitzvos, shnei inyonim heim. Educating someone about the mitzvos and the acceptance of mitzvos are two separate categories. De Kabbalah HaMitzvos, he bestam shekiva l'adlichonis medas Yehudis. Because when I accept upon myself the mitzvos, that's just a general declaration that I want to become Jewish. Does that have even mele Kabbalah HaMitzvos, which happens to bring along with it also the acceptance of the mitzvos. Hodas HaMitzvos hu lo'odia lo inyan mitzvos. Whereas Hodas HaMitzvos, learning about the mitzvos, is just a way for me now to understand better what I accepted upon myself. And therefore, he says, there's really two different things. V'zeh einu ma'akev. U'l'olam b'kabbalas ha-mitzvos b'stam ma'akev. So let's say I went to convert, whatever system it was. The rabbi I converted with didn't really have a lot of time.
We lost you, rabbi. Go back. We lost you for a minute.
Okay, am I back? We're good?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, I'm glad to be back with all of you. I missed all of you as well. All right, so the important point that he's making is that it's one thing if the rabbi who was my sponsoring rabbi, he didn't have a lot of time on his hands, he didn't have enough time to teach me all the halachos I need to know, but it's another thing if fundamentally there's something lacking in my Kabbalah HaMitzvos, in my philosophical acceptance of the mitzvos. And that's really what it means when we learned in that Gemara that if someone wants to accept upon himself 612 mitzvos, but not 613, there's something flawed in their conversion. So whereas if I fundamentally say, I am willing to follow all the mitzvos that God gives me, think about it. That's, you know, we're talking about Shavuos, right? That's what the Jewish people really did when you think about it at Har Sinai. When God offered us the Torah, what do we say? Nase v'nishma. We will accept the Torah, and then we will continue to learn and discover what you have in store for us. No, right now, at this point, we don't know a lot of mitzvot. Can we know about Rosh Chodesh? We know a few things along the way. We know about Karban Pesach, but we don't know the whole Torah at this point. We say nase v'nishma. We may not know enough yet, but we know enough to have an idea of what we're accepting. And we fundamentally are accepting the mitzvos. And Toby, with that distinction, we can answer your question about, let's say later down the line, he stops keeping the mitzvos. Rechaim Ozer Gudinsky, in his Shaz at Shulas Achiezer, source number 9, he says, when do we not accept somebody? When do we say there's something flawed with their acceptance of the mitzvos? Hainu b'masne shalo lekabel shiyam mutter lo dover zem min adin. If I say, I accept all the mitzvahs in the Torah, with the exception of lighting a fire on Shabbos. I like lighting fires on Shabbos. I'm a pyromaniac. I love all making fireworks, whatever it might be. I can't give up that one day a week of making a fire. So if I stipulate, I declare, I have no intention of keeping this mitzvah, then, sorry, we can't convert you, Charlie. However, and his idea, by the way, he says, is because you can't have a half conversion. It's either take all 613 mitzvos or you take none of them. But if I fundamentally accept all the mitzvos as binding upon me, But like Toby said, okay, but down the line, I realize I have a lot of hard time. I succumb to temptation. We don't retroactively say that your Kabbalah HaMitzvos was invalid. You fundamentally accepted the mitzvahs upon you. It just happens to be that you had issues with keeping it. That's not an issue with your Kabbalah HaMitzvos. You are a full and complete Jew. And now you're just like any other Jew who struggles with some mitzvahs here and there, right? Someone is born Jewish. I mean, anyone here on this class is born Jewish can attest that just because you're born Jewish doesn't mean you have an easy time keeping the mitzvahs, right? We all, many of us have our struggles. So, and with this, we could also, not directly connected, but I'd be remiss if I didn't share this other source from Moshe Feinstein, which also is a super fundamental source. Ah, this is going to be a fun one. Guys, what's the rule I told you when I say, when I told you it says in a tshuva, Bavura Vosino Arabim, in the multitude of our sins? What's that indication for? It means it's going to be a fun tshuva. That's what it means. Okay? a little of my made-up methodology when we learn tshuvas. The Yesh Ladun. So what Moshe Feinstein is dealing with is, let's say, I just want to seal your face when I tell you this. Let's say Moshe Feinstein is based in is converting a woman who does not plan on covering her elbows. So he didn't say elbows specifically, but not keeping the basic laws of because the halakha we could debate if covering the elbows is true. I'm a little bit joking here. But basically, she's not keeping the halakhic level that Snias requires of her. Is there something lacking in her Kabbalah HaMitzvos? Can we say that she did not genuinely accept upon herself the laws of the Torah if she then immediately is not dressing in a way that comports with the laws of Snias, with the laws of modesty? It's a pretty good question, right?
But, well, how is it different from the other question? Again, are we talking about the next day, or we're talking about 2 years down the line when she couldn't stand sweltering in August?
We're talking the next day. This is the next day. It's the winter. She just wants to look stylish. But, you know, those are our conditions there. This is not 2 years down the line. This is literally the next day. Maybe even inside Beistin itself. Who knows? So Moshe Feinstein says as follows, and actually, I was really surprised when I read this coming from Moshe Feinstein. Moshe Feinstein has a number of kulas. When it comes to social issues, by the way, you know, Moshe Feinstein was really good with, you know, Chalav Akum, and, you know, he has all sorts of, like, different leniencies he's construed. When it comes to social issues, you know, you see what he writes about homosexuality and about feminism. He was pretty conservative. So this is, with that introduction, this is very surprising. He writes, look, it's not just this woman's problem. He says, I'm just reading the words, by the way. You know, you could take it as you like. These are his words, not my own. Nowadays, in the multitude of our sins, even good Jewish girls growing up, even though they keep mitzvahs in general, even they aren't keeping this. They're wearing these talboshes that preaches these promiscuous clothes. So look at this prospective convert. She's looking around and she sees how Jews dress. What's she thinking? Well, look, if the rabbis are telling me to cover my elbows, and but I'm looking around in my community that I want to move to, and the women are not covering their elbows over there. So then she's going to think to herself, you know what? It's probably not halakha for me to cover my elbows. It's probably just the rabbis imposing a chumrah upon me. They probably just want to be more stringent with me. They have a higher bar for me because I'm converting. She knows women who consider themselves religious. But meanwhile, they're wearing promiscuous clothing. Again, I use the elbows as more of an exaggeration. And here's the kicker. Even if the rabbis explicitly say to her, by the way, this is halacha. You need to, you know, dress in XYZ fashion. Otherwise, you're breaking halacha. She's still not going to believe them if their constituents aren't keeping that. Vim Kane, yesh lidon osa kineskaira gishol yad medina torshu ger. So what's Rav Moshe Feinstein saying? There's nothing lacking in her kabbalas hamitzvos. There's nothing lacking in her acceptance of the mitzvos. Rather, she accepted the mitzvos completely, and she just doesn't understand. She just doesn't understand.
She's following sort of community standards.
What was that?
She's following community standards.
Right, she's following her community standards, but according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, she's following the lack of standards, rather. Just the precise and the lack.
Yeah.
Now, what exactly are those standards? That's for another class, but not a class that I'm going to give because, I don't feel like giving a class where I dictate sneeze to women. That's not my thing. I always find it funny when men, like, you know, they make it their, like, they make it their life's mission to write a book about sneeze. Whatever. Okay. Not my area. So those are the sources that I wanted to share. There's one other source, but I'll send you a source sheet at another time. Which actually does deal a little bit about marriage as well, but we'll see that for another occasion. But basically what I wanted to share was to understand how conversions work. Now, what does this mean for different standards when it comes to different Bati Dinim? So the reason there's a lot of divergence, one of the reasons, a lot of divergence between different courts, it's not because they have all these fundamental disagreements about going to the mikvah, not because they have these fundamental disagreements about how to have a bris. What it really comes down to, I think, is the Kabbalas HaMitzvos and the Hodas HaMitzvos, is the standard of education that they want them to have, and also where their comfort level is for when that person reaches the threshold of A, being knowledgeable enough, and B, we knowing that he's really on board for life. That is going to be one of the major areas where Bati Dinim will diverge from one another. And because there is so much subjectivity in there, it lends itself to variance. But again, you know how I don't want to get too off topic, but you know, in Israel, it came out not so long ago that the Rabbanut, the chief rabbin, had a blacklist of rabbis who they didn't really accept in America. For writing Jewish status, and I think for conversions as well. So one could say, you know, if a liberal modern Orthodox rabbi does a conversion, they might not recognize the Kabbalas HaMitzvos because maybe, you know, that liberal modern Orthodox rabbi isn't going to sign on to the same tenets as maybe the general Orthodox rabbi is going to sign on to. So if they think that rabbi doesn't accept the basic tenets of Judaism, certainly we can't rely on him infusing the right beliefs into someone that he's converting. So that's another angle there that we need to think about. But anyway, definitely there is what to talk about the politics of conversion, but I really appreciate us steering clear of the politics. What I did hope we accomplished tonight was giving a little bit of background of what the basic sources and basic disagreements are about the conversion process. And hopefully it gives a little bit of an appreciation to understand where the variance might be coming from. And now we have sources that we can use so we can have more educated and intelligent discussions about this, God willing, moving forward in the future. The shiur will conclude right now. You're welcome to log off. I'll stay on until 9:30 to answer questions. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. There's also another avenue that's connected to converting, and that's when a child is converted, a baby. And,
yes.
And the parents have to accept that they're going to give the child a Jewish education.
Yes.
Which I don't know. I know someone who had to do that, and I, it was like so far from the truth, But in order to have this child converted, they had to say yes.
Well, you're saying
you can say anything. I mean, no one's going to come back afterwards and say it might not
even be the wisest thing, because this may be a child that has special needs or difficulties in a certain Jewish setting.
It turned out that is the case, but it also turned out that in general, the parents themselves are not so interested in Yiddishkeit. So, but they had to say yes in order to get the child converted.
So this is, we'll save this for another shiur. We'll save for another shiur, actually, if we return back for Moshe Sternbach at some point.
The other problem, just one moment.
But when it comes to converting a child, generally when someone converts, you do it by your own prerogative.
Right.
The thing is, children have the prerogative to make such a choice. So what it operates through in halacha is called zachen la'adam shelo b'fanav. So usually, how does zachen la'adam shelo b'fanav work in halacha? What it means is, this is how my ninth grade Rebbe explained to us when we were learning Kiddushin. He said, if I'm walking down the street one day, and I see on a table there's a sefer over there, and I want to acquire it for Moshe Kurtz, I can pick it up, lift up, and say, I'm performing a kinyan in order for Moshe Kurtz to acquire this book. And because it's a schus, zachen schus, it's a merit, meaning I would want that sefer, he doesn't need to ask me before he acquires it for me. However, he said, if I'm walking down the street and I see a DVD on the floor and I want to pick it up in order to acquire for Moshe Kurtz, I would not be able to acquire it without his permission, because ein chavin la'adam shelo b'fanav. We do not, I cannot give you something that's a chob, something that's to your detriment against your will. So if it was a DVD, he said, then he wouldn't be allowed to do it, because it'd be also for me to own a DVD. I ain't that sheer that we have our Moshe Sternbach about television. So the way it works with a child is the same thing. The Beis Din needs to make a decision. Are we doing this child a favor by converting them? And this is actually, by the way, it's the same calculus I have to do for a convert as well. It's not just a question of what's good for the Jewish people by adding in this person to the Jewish faith, but actually they need to be concerned for the child who's converting, and also for an adult convert as well. Because a person who's not Jewish only is obligated in 7 mitzvos. But when you become Jewish, you also take on a whole new slew of mitzvos that you may have not been prepared for. And guess what? Once you're Jewish, there's no going back. And if you don't abide by all the different mitzvos that you are obligated in, then you're held accountable for it. So Beis Din might not be doing this child a favor.
If you're a kid, though, you have...
I'll just finish this one point. So for a kid, Susan, a child, if he's not going to get a Jewish education and he's not going to be raised to understand the different mitzvahs he has to perform, are we really doing him a favor by making him Jewish when it's now incumbent upon him and he's not going to be able to abide by the mitzvahs that are now he's obligated in? One could argue that it's a chov, that it's to his detriment that we make him Jewish then. And so that's part of the discussion.
But the thing I was going to say, being adopted by this Jewish family, then... you can't just leave him out there not being Jewish when they're Jewish. Right. How is that benefiting him?
Well, I've had some experience.
But what I was going to say is the kid has an out. You have to give the kid an out when they become of age.
When they become bar mitzvah, they are asked, do you want to be
Jewish?
And the kid can say, no, I know one instance.
Yeah, the kid can reject it. But unlike a bris.
I also know of another instance that happened in a conservative synagogue on Long Island. There were several families who adopted young children. Infants were not much older than that. And they had an Orthodox rabbi, which back in the 60s and 70s, maybe even later, it was common because there were a lot of Orthodox rabbis who wanted a job. And there weren't a lot of conservative rabbis, and so they wound up becoming rabbis in conservative synagogues. And there's one rabbi, Orthodox, several children. The children thinking they were Jewish, and they weren't until they went to the mikveh.
Okay. Well, here's another question, though. What if, you know, let's say in an adoptive situation, because that's basically where this is going to arise, right? I mean, if the parents are Jewish, now adopted a non-Jewish child. What if the parents don't want the child that he's adopted?
Wife and I adopted a Jew, so we didn't have a problem with the conversion issues. But you know, people do adopt, and we told them that he's adopted, and has not created any problems. Matter of fact, I gave him the file folder with all the information on the adoption that we did through the Suffolk County, New York Family Court.
That doesn't happen all the time.
Well, now a lot of kids through DNA tests find out backgrounds that they didn't expect to find, you know, that the adoptive parents never thought they'd find out about.
He just had to look in the mirror and know that he was adopted.
Ancestry.
I apologize. Thank I'm losing the signal on my
end. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I realize that we're raising more questions than answers, but it's a very robust discussion.
Great.
And I'm glad I picked a topic that was
amazing. That means it was a good class.
Yes. That's right. Very good.
Okay. Have a great week, everyone.
Good night.
See you Thursday.
See you Thursday, God willing.